To be rejected. Upadeha. Acceptable. Rahitam. Devoid of. Arudam. Elevated. Padam. To the transcendental position. Ikshate. He sees. Translation. Due to his transcendental intelligence, the pure devotee is equipoised in his vision and sees himself to be uncontaminated by matter. He does not see anything as superior or inferior, and he feels himself elevated to the transcendental platform of being equal in qualities with the Supreme Person. So you can repeat. Due to his transcendental intelligence, the pure devotee is equipoised in his vision and sees himself to be uncontaminated by matter. He does not see anything as superior or inferior, and he feels himself elevated to the transcendental platform of being equal in qualities with the Supreme Person. So, purport by His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. Perception of the disagreeable arises from attachment. A devotee has no personal attachment to anything. Therefore, for him, there is no question of agreeable or disagreeable. For the service of the Lord, he can accept anything, even though it may be disagreeable to his personal interest. In fact, he is completely free from personal interest, and thus anything agreeable to the Lord is agreeable to him. For example, for Arjuna, at first fighting was not agreeable, but when he understood that the fighting was agreeable to the Lord, he accepted the fighting as agreeable. That is the position of a pure devotee. For his personal interest, there is nothing which is agreeable or disagreeable. Everything is done for the Lord, and therefore he is free from attachment and detachment. That is the transcendental stage of neutrality. A pure devotee enjoys life in the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. So, Sat-tidai-vatman-hatmanam nisangam samradarshanam heyopadeya-rahitam arudam padam ikshate. So, Om-ganat-timidanda-sha-gananjana-shalakya-chakshur-meditam-yena-tasmai-shi-gurave-namaha. So, this platform of neutrality is a very high standard, of course. And it means giving up the four purusharthas. Purusha means person. Sometimes it can mean man, but actually it means mankind or person kind, the politically correct language. So anyway, so purusha, artha. Artha means a goal. The word artha can actually mean different things according to the context in which it is used. Artha can also mean economic development or acquiring things. So anyway, but basically it means artha, purushartha. So the four purusharthas, chatur purusharthas, of course that's famous, everybody knows, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Dharma means, you know, just religion, like rituals, being very much into religion, because that's what we were taught when we were young. That's what our parents taught us. We got to get bar mitzvahed, you know, whatever the religious scenario we're born in. And so that's dharma, you know, just it gives one. Of course, dharma also means different things in different contexts. Dharma could also mean the inherent quality of a thing, as Śrīla Prabhupāda described it. But in this particular context, it means just rituals or religious practices. So dharma, and then artha, economic development, and then kama, sense gratification, and finally moksha. The interesting thing is, if, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu states, mukti mukti siddhi kam sakalaya santa, Krishna bhakti nishkam ata eva shanta, that as long as one is desiring all the, any of these things, the purusharthas, the four purusharthas, then bhakti, of course, bhakti means sense gratification, and mukti, liberation or powers within this world, then one is a shanta. He's not peaceful. So, and without peace, there's no happiness. So in other words, as long as you're desiring these things, as long as you're engaged in acquiring these things, as long as your consciousness is centered on these things, you're not going to be happy because you're not going to be peaceful. And then, of course, there's the Panchama Purushartha. Panchama means five in Sanskrit, which is prema, Krishna prema. And Krishna prema basically means the desire, anyabhilasha, that's described by Srila Rupa Goswami, anyabhilashita shunyam gyanakarma anabhitam anukulyena krishnanu shivanam bhakti rutamam, which is devoid of all that other stuff, all the other purusharthas. Jnana and karma. Desire for liberation, desire for anything within this world. Karma mean anything. Karma in this context means anything in this world. Anavritam, and then anukulyanish, that serving Krishna according to the way he wants, which is a big thing. Usually we want to serve Krishna the way we want. Anukulyanam krishnana shilanam bhakti rutamam. And then doing it actively, not just sitting down and meditating on your navel, or just you becoming a babaji somewhere, anukulena krishnada shilanam, and doing it with a spirit of pleasing Krishna. So anyway, so when one picks up those or focuses on those particular principles given by Srila Rupa Goswami, then one can be truly renounced, because that's really the topic of this section in the Srimad Bhagavatam, renunciation, because the title of the chapter is Entanglement and Fruit of Activity, so how to become renounced from these things. In other words, there has to be something we call in Sanskrit a sankalpa, or objective. That's how you become renounced. And that objectives are listed by Srila Rupa Goswami. So it's very interesting. Someone sent me a letter yesterday. They didn't hear me properly when I mentioned the word sankalpa, and they said, before I chant, I have a samsara. It's a devotee in Croatia. I said, that's interesting, you have a samsara. Samsara means like the wheel of birth and death or entanglement in the material world. I said, the word you should be using is sankalpa, not samsara. Sa means with. Kalpa is desire. Anyway, so if we have an intention, then renunciation becomes very, very easy. Even in the material world, we find people with some particular objective, and they're able to become very renounced. Like the typical example given is Harani Kashipu. He had an objective. What was his objective? His objective was to become so powerful that he couldn't be killed, and also more powerful than any demigod. So that was his objective, and therefore he was able to exhibit extreme renunciation. Not from everything. He was able to exhibit renunciation from bhakti, but not from siddhi. So that's the problem with material renunciation. You can't do bhakti, mukti, siddhi. You can't be renounced from dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. You can be renounced from one of them, but you can't be renounced from all of them by material renunciation. You understand? Because there's a material objective. So in other words, he was renounced from bhakti, sense gratification, certainly, at least for some time, until he got his benediction from Lord Brahma, and then he was again engaged in sense gratification. So only with Krishna consciousness can you be truly renounced from all these bhakti, mukti, siddhi, or dharma, artha, and kama, and moksha, can you be truly renounced. So that means that we have to have some spiritual objective, and as we mentioned before, that's defined by Srila Rupa Goswami. We have to have the objective of pleasing Krishna by our activities, bhakti, that's bhakti yoga. For those of you who are not aware, that's what we're supposed to be doing, not karma yoga, jnana yoga, hatha yoga, all these other yoga systems. So the desire to please Krishna, and then we have to be pleasing Krishna the way he wants to be pleased. Like Prabhupada said, if someone brings me milk and I ask for water, he said, that's not service. And then one has to be very active in that endeavor, 24 hours a day in that endeavor. So if we focus on those things as an objective, objectives, then we can exhibit great renunciation in this world, rather than the negation of sense gratification. And there's many examples of this, of course, in the Vedic literatures, as some are incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and some are Shaktivesh or empowered devotees. I mean, for example, you have Lord Rishabhadev, who is an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada actually said he's empowered incarnation, not Vishnu Tattva. So he was able to exhibit so much renunciation that he did this process called Jada Yoga. And Jada Yoga means that you become dumb. Jada means like stone. So you just become like dumb and like a stone, and everybody's making fun of you, thinking you're stupid. And then you can just actually be absorbed in Krishna consciousness because you're not getting any profit, adoration, distinction, any of the amenities of this material world. So, of course, that process of Jada Yoga is not meant for us. That's a process followed. There was one King Arhat, and he was the founder of the Jain religion. And in the Jain religion, they actually do that. They engage in they even pluck their hairs out of their body. It's pretty heavy, isn't it? They take little tweezers and pluck their hairs out to torture the body. But Prabhupada said that's a concoction. But what Lord Rishabhadev was showing was that when one is absorbed in Krishna, in Krishna consciousness, then who cares what people think of you? I mean, it's a big thing. Like, I preach a lot to people from India, and there's a lot of attention to reputation in India. Big attention to reputation, and people would rather die than admit. For example, I mean, in the household life, sometimes the wife is being beaten by the husband. So she would rather die in such a situation than admit to everyone, yes, my husband's beating me, he's killing me. You know, she loses her eyes, you know, because he just punches her eyes out. And she says, well, I just hit myself, I fell down the stairs. But actually she was thrown down the stairs by the husband. So there's this whole idea of like reputation. Of course, that's good in one sense. For a sannyasi needs a reputation to preach, because if a sannyasi doesn't have a good reputation, nobody's going to listen to him. You know, if everybody saw the sannyasi go to see The Dark Knight the other day, you know, Batman picture. So if everyone went to the movies and saw the sannyasi there with his girlfriend, I mean, he's not going to be so effective in preaching Krishna. Even if he went with his boyfriend, it's like, this is a different age, actually. So it's not going to be so effective. So, but this whole consciousness of reputation is so important in the, especially in the Hindu culture. And there's something to be said about it too, but they take it to such an extreme that it becomes really dysfunctional. You know, the people will actually die in the process, or people will not take up Krishna consciousness, or people will not admit that they're Krishna conscious. Just like in the culture I was brought up, it was like that. My mother was so worried about her reputation when I joined the Krishna conscious movement, she told everybody I'd gone to Israel to join a kibbutz. And then when I came back to visit her, all of her friends were asking me, you know, how was Israel? And that was one of the few times I had to lie, you know, and tell Israel was great, you know, it was fantastic. And we killed a few Arabs in the process, but but, you know, the
single is not compatible with this.
Yeah, we have to. Now it's incompatible. So, but that attention to reputation, obviously a devotee is not really concerned with reputation except insofar as it relates to Krishna's service, which you mentioned before as a sannyasi. Sannyasi has to be concerned with anyone preaching or the reputation of the movement. Prabhupada was also very concerned with the reputation of the movement. So in those cases, reputation is important. But we see Lord Rishabhadev, he was the king before, and he was obviously, you know, he had a pretty good reputation. And he just gave up everything, turned everything over to his sons. You know, there's a famous verses spoken by Lord Rishabhadev where he instructs his sons not to be engaged in sense gratification. Nayam deho deha bhajam loke kastam kama marite vidbhujam. Yeah, he says, my dear sons, please don't try to enjoy the senses like the hogs and the dogs do. Vidbhujam, yeah, that means like the pig, stool eaters, basically. He says you should engage in austerities. So anyway, so Lord Rishabhadev, after giving those instructions, simply just, you know, engage in abject renunciation with people even throwing things at him, you know, passing air before him, making fun of him, and simply because he was disinterested in this world, and he was interested in Krishna. And then, of course, we have other examples of Bharat Maharaj, who took up the Jata Yoga process. You know, Bharat, in his second incarnation, is Jata Bharata. There's that word Jata, which means like a stone again. It's because he was completely disinterested in reputation and all those things. So the point I'm making is that shows the renunciation comes from the absorption in Krishna consciousness, not from a negative attitude towards oneself. You know, it doesn't come because one is extremely depressed in this world, thinking horribly about oneself, or trying to become renounced in an impersonal way. It comes simply because one is absorbed in Krishna. And you find that in the six Goswamis of Vrindavan too, that Nidra Hara Vihara. They gave up eating, they gave up sleeping because they were simply having a good time serving Krishna. So that's where renunciation comes from. I mean, the six Goswamis, of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave up, it's described in the Mahabharata that the Supreme, you're predicting the advent of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Lord will appear in the Kali Yuga and he will give up the goddess of fortune and to go to the forest for the welfare of all their living entities. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it's actually predicted Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's sannyas. So he gave up, you know, Lakshmi. I forget the Sanskrit, Lakshmi Sudurla. There's actually Sanskrit on it. He gave up the association of his wife, who was an expansion or incarnation of Lakshmi, just to go to the forest and preach and also be absorbed in the internal mood of Srimati Radharani's in relationship to Krishna. So you see, it's all like there's something internally going on, something internally positive and a positive mood going on that brings the pure devotee to that state of renunciation. So the question is, how can we become renounced? You know, we don't have this thing internally going on where we're thinking of separation from Krishna, you know, hey Rad, hey Braja Devi, hey. We're not, when we leave this temple room, we're not looking for Radharani and Krishna. We're basically looking for something to eat. So, isn't it? I mean, that's, you know, as soon as the morning program's over, I'm thinking, you know, when is prasadam? I do my little puja, and then prasadam ki jai after that. So we're not in that mood of renunciation that stimulated the renunciation or the mood of intense separation from Krishna that stimulated the renunciation of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. So how do we become renounced? Well, we're not in that mood, but we can actually think of what pleases Krishna and our spiritual master in a spirit of devotion. And based on that, we can actually become neutral to this material world. If you actually have that objective or sankalpa, as we mentioned before, our sankalpa is obviously not the same as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or Srila Prabhupada. I mean, but it can be to please them. you know, just like if you can't be on a particular platform, if you're not on a particular platform in devotional service, you can actually serve those who are on that platform, and then you absorb that mode. You know, like you're serving a hot seva mahura vimuktes. That statement is there. When one serves a mahatma, a great devotee, then the door to liberation, a door to Krishna consciousness is open, or sadhu sangha, sadhu sarva sastra koi, ladhu matra, sadhu sangha, sarva siddhi hoi. Then, you know, that's the point. So we can actually concentrate on pleasing the spiritual master, pleasing Krishna, if we have some particular, or pleasing the deities, like that. And then renunciation naturally comes at that particular juncture because we're concentrating on pleasing the person. Just like I mentioned many times before, people ask me how I gave up, you know, I'm not on the level of the Six Goswamis of Vrindavan, but, you know, I gave up certain things that I was attached to, like my whole life was based on cheese and pizza for many years. And how did I give that up? Because I decided that this would please, I could live longer, you know, and serving Srila Prabhupada. It all was centered on Prabhupada. You know, I had pleasing Prabhupada. So, and not because, you know, I was experiencing the Gopi Bhava or anything like that, but because we were experiencing, identifying ourselves as servants of our spiritual master. So if one has that identification as a servant, just like if one is a butler or a servant in a particular house, you're not going to try to enjoy the master's property. It's natural. It's like, you know, you're hired to be the butler or chauffeur, let's say chauffeur, because it's hard to relate to butler nowadays. That's a real English thing, you know, butler. You know, you wear that hat, you know, butler wears a particular type of hat. But let's say you're hired to be a chauffeur. Chauffeur means driver, for those of you who don't know. It's, you know, it's not, you don't have the, shouldn't have the desire to take the car out and, you know, just like use it for your own sense gratification. Because you understand everything belongs to the master and you understand who you are. You understand your position. Just like people might say, you should understand your position. And that's, of course, that's used in the material world to exploit people when you say, understand your position. Bow down, mister. So if you understand, I mean, just like the butler understands, or the chauffeur understands, and he's not, or shouldn't be inclined to take the car out, you know, and just like enjoy himself, because the car belongs to the master, he's meant to serve the master. So that's that whole identification, and he wears a uniform at the same time. So if we have that identification, that who am I? Kayami, that means who am I? If I have the identification that I am a servant, I am meant to serve, I'm meant to be devotional like that, then renunciation comes very, very simply and very, very easily. And then one becomes detached because he's thinking, you know, even if he comes upon something very agreeable that would normally be agreeable, and said, this is not agreeable to my master, so, you know, I just, you know, it's just not something for me. It's not going to please Krishna. It's not going to please my spiritual master. Anyway, so that's renunciation. Otherwise, renunciation is, as described by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, of three types, in the mode of ignorance, passion, or goodness. Renunciation in the mode of ignorance is that one gives up things, especially one's prescribed duty, according to Krishna in the Gita. One gives up his one's prescribed duty out of just like, ignorance, illusion. Illusion is the word Prabhupada used. Renunciation of the mode of passion is one gives up some prescribed duty because it's too difficult. And renunciation of the mode of goodness is where one does one's prescribed duty regardless of the situation. But transcendental renunciation is where one does one's duty and remains detached because one's whole consciousness is focused, not simply in the mode of goodness platform, which is just actually a ritualistic platform, but, or because it ought to be done, but because he's trying to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anyway, so these are some of the hints as far as how we can become more renounced or neutral. Let's say, let's use the word neutral for renunciation because that helps us understand renunciation better than the word renunciation. You know, renunciation has some negative imports to it, you know, negative context or negative implicit meaning that, you know, giving up. But actually, to be more precise, a devotee's consciousness is one of neutrality. Samak sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim labhate param. Same thing. Like yesterday we were talking about this word sama, equal poised. Isn't it? Brahma bhuta prasanatma lasochati nakankshati. There's the same concept as that being mentioned here in this verse. When one is on the platform of Brahma bhuta, understanding one's soul, part and parcel of Krishna, and then there's no hankering, no lamenting. In other words, there's no attraction, no repulsion. Same thing. Sochni kangshati samak sarveshu. That means samak, he's equal poised. Sarveshu, to everything. Bhuteshu, to all living entities. To all the material energy. Bhutva can mean that which is manifested, and also can mean living entity, depending on the context. Samak sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim labhate param. One can actually come to the stage of devotional service. Okay? So these are some of the points. So any questions, comments, arguments, problems about this? Yeah.
I have a question about the verse. It spoke about the everything is done from the Lord and everything
is between attachment and detachment. So we receive. He does not say
anything. It's the last, next to last, third
sentence. Third sentence, he does not see anything as superior or inferior, right? And he feels himself elevated to the transcendental platform, being equal in quality with the Supreme Person. Is that it? Or?
No, of the purport.
The purport. Oh, sorry. For his personal interest, is that it?
Last. Yeah, but everything is done, part of that last
part. For his personal interest, there's nothing which is agreeable or disagreeable. Yeah. Yeah, attachment and detachment in this.
Free from detachment.
He's free from attachment and detachment. Detachment in this particular context means aversion. You know, you have to understand the words according to the, because he is definitely detached.
Right. Yeah.
Because he's neutral. That's real detachment. Mm. But in this in the context of this, words are generally understood contextually. Just like, there's so many words. Sanskrit words are also understood contextually. Just like the word karma. Karma could mean action. It could also mean reaction. It could also mean, good karma, like karma as opposed to vikarma or akarma. It could mean, pious activities. Like sometimes devotees say, about people who are not members of the Krishna consciousness movement, they're karmis. Technically speaking, they're vikarmis for most of them, rather than karmis. And devotees are akarmis. It means without karma, without reaction. So anyway, so practically speaking, most words do depend upon the context for their definition. So here, that detachment means he's free from attachment and detachment. So that means he's free from attraction and repulsion. In this particular, yeah.
I have a question about the translation. It's stated that the pure devotee sees himself as it seems like it's this, an exalted position. And,
yeah.
And yet we're told that the devotees see themselves as lower than lowest, and the Uttamadhikari sees everyone as a devotee except himself.
Uncontaminated by matter. In other words, he understands that the soul, it's not that he thinks, I have no inclinations in this material world, but he identifies himself as the soul, which is always uncontaminated by matter.
He feels himself elevated in the transcendental platform, being equal with qualities of the Supreme Person. This is a very, maybe when he reaches or another elevated position, he feels equal or even more superior to Krishna. How is it? I guess he's entering into a.
This is a pure devotee, if you see, because of the trans. The pure devotee, that's not, at least that's not me.
Well, how does that definition of the Uddamadakara, that he sees everyone as a devotee but himself, how does that jive with this?
Well, my particular understanding of this is the devotee is functioning on different levels simultaneously. Obviously, the Uttama Adhikari is engaged in his personal relationship with Krishna on an internal basis. Like you see hear about the example of Srinivasacharya, where Srinivasacharya went into meditation, and he was actually looking for Radharani's toe ring or ankle bell in the water, and then his disciple Ramchandra Kaviraj joined him. There's something going on internally with a pure devotee. So he's on that level, but also, in other words, he has his siddha deha, and also he has his sadhana deha. He actually has the external manifestation. So there's, I don't want to say it's like a split personality, but it's just like he functions differently on each level.
You come into a humble position. Automatically, it's not a false position. It's just a humble position. And then otherwise, when you're in your internal reality, then you may be superior.
So when he's on different plane, function on different planes, he exhibits himself differently. Depending on who he's dealing with. Like, I'm trying to think of an example, but you see that the pure devotee, obviously, Prabhupada one time said to a devotee, "Don't you understand? There was never a time when I was not Krishna conscious." And the devotee was bowled over just to hear that statement of his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. Yet at the same time, sometimes Prabhupada would say, "My spiritual master has sent all of you to assist me," and Prabhupada would exhibit extreme humility in relation to it. So I would see that the pure devotee can actually exhibit or feel, it's not just an act, but actually, feel different symptoms at different times according to the scenario. That's my understanding. Just like we also have that experience, of course, not spiritually in contradistinction to the material. But even within the material world, we have different emotional manifestations at different times. We shift gears, so to speak. So I think the pure devotee is also a person who's able to shift gears at different times. Obviously, he must understand he's a pure devotee because he's with Krishna. He's seen Krishna. Prabhupada had conversations with Krishna. And internally, we don't know what's going on in the heart and the mind of the pure devotee. So obviously, he knows he's made it. I mean, you have to know when you close your eyes and you go into trance, and then you're serving Radha and Krishna in your heart of hearts. I mean, the descriptions given by Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur about one who reaches the pure devotional state, it's obvious that the person knows. Because Krishna comes up, shakes his hand or says, "Hey, how are you?
Welcome back,
it's obvious you've made it at that particular point. But at the same time, the mood can shift to one of abject humility. I mean, the example Prabhupada gave, let's say, using the example out of context, Prabhupada's context, let's say the President of the United States knows he's the President, but he shifts his mood when it's in relationship to his son. Like Prabhupada gave the example of Kennedy, who would play with his little son, play horsey or something like that. The son would get on his back. So there's different moods or bhavas or emotions that are exhibited by a pure devotee. And I mean, for me to understand these things completely would require a little more advancement, devotional service, but at least theoretically, I can compare it to the things we experience in this world, that we have different moods at different times. So I think they're honest moods. I don't think it's just an act.
The difference is that we go into those moods in what Krishna wants, not
our mood. Yeah, exactly. The pure devotee goes into what... And we go into different moods according to the modes. What modes... You know, we wake up in the morning and we're in a bad mood in the morning. Is that just the modes of nature? It's a good question. But obviously the pure devotee knows these modes. What's that?